Good evening, everybody. Call to order the regular Wednesday, July 27th, 2022 meeting of the Oceano Community Service District Board of Directors. Roll call, please.
Director Gibson?
Present.
Director Montez?
Yes.
Director Villa? Absent. Vice President, she was Vice President. Director Austin?
Here.
And President White?
Here. Okay, well, I'll stand for the flag salute. Agenda review. Do we have any changes, any amendments?
Nothing with me.
Move that we accept the agenda as presented.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passed 4-0, 1 absent. Okay. Start with public comments for matters not on the agenda tonight. And I see a lot of public. I don't know.
Good evening. My name is April, and I'm here to give you the report for Oceano's Advisory Council. We had a meeting. We have several meetings all the time. But in particular, I want to let you guys know that Oceano's Advisory Council will be holding two meetings pertaining to the short-term vacation rental ordinance. So we are one of the last coastal cities or areas within San Luis County that does not have a vacation rental ordinance. Short-term vacation rental ordinance. So the first meeting is August 20th on a Saturday. It's here at the OCSD building in this room at 10 a.m. And then on the 22nd, which is a Monday, and that will be via Zoom to be very inclusive and accommodating to all members of our community. And that will be at 6:30 p.m. If you go to the Oceano Advisory Council website, you can get the links to that stuff. Update, we were given from the county a project that we put on our agenda and we reviewed from State Parks. It has to do with the remodeling and redoing some property that they have off of Highway 1. And so we went over that. We met with State Parks representative and then presented our information and gave that to the county. The other thing that we just did recently is work together with the Oceano Community Services District and Mr. Clemens in order to facilitate EcoSlow and getting those two to talk together about EcoSlow having a free tree program through a grant and trying to get some free trees into Oceano. So that's what's going on with Oceano's Advisory Council. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, we'll go on with special presentation, staff reports. Is anyone here from the sheriff's office tonight? I don't see anyone. Chief Lieberman, I believe you're next. Thank you.
Good evening, President and Board. Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief. I'm here for an agenda item later this evening as well. Just wanted to share with you that we continue to have 5 personnel committed to the Oak Fire up in Mariposa County. Last update mid-afternoon was about 18,700 acres and 32% containment. We're working to swap out the crew of engine 6693 likely on Sunday and replace them with another unless they're demobilized prior to that. So everyone's well. Today's a day off. They're in base camp. Just wanted to share that information.
Question, I believe they're doing structural protection. Or are they doing?
They're actually doing what's called tactical patrol with their strike team on a division. So they're actually away from structures at this point, just searching for hot spots, retrieving hose that's no longer needed, where there's hose lines that are going for thousands of feet, and just keeping other engines filled with water using suction out of the waterways.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions? I guess not.
No, thank you, Chief.
Tony? Maricino? Utilities Systems Manager.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino, Utility Systems Manager. Just want to give you an update. Lopez is currently at 25.7% full, which is 12,687 acre feet. So we're still continuing to do weekly, monthly samples. We had 8 work orders, 9 USAs, 7 customer service calls, and 2 after-hours call-outs. One was for a turn-on for repairs once they were complete, and one was for a turn-off for repairs. We had meter reads. Once meter reads were complete, we had re-reads and leak notifications to customers and any discrepancies on the routes, like replaced meters, meter boxes, repairs. We had installed a reader at Well 8 to see what kind of power is coming in from PG&E, just to ensure that we're getting adequate power, because we did have a motor go down. I just want to know, since we have a new one up there, that they're supplying adequate power. The hydrant relocation project on Highway 1 for Caltrans, it is complete. We installed the hydrant, poured thrust blocks. The hydrant is pressurized and up, and the old one is currently black bagged. We will remove that at a later time when the trailer parks and has a kind of a slower time of the year in a few months when there's less tourism, because we're going to have to shut the main off and cut that out because it's all on transite. And we're still continuing to do trash pickups. We cammered a sewer lateral on Wilmar to get it abandoned prior to the 12 units that are going in on the 2400 block of Wilmar. That completes everything. Any questions?
Thank you. Now, is our favorite fire hydrant still working?
It is. It's still up and running. It has not been hit.
This week.
Correct. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. OCSD Manager?
President White and Board. So since our last meeting, met with the city managers in Rio Grande and Grover Beach to talk about fire, as we have an item on our agenda tonight, and what we did was set up regular meetings so that we can discuss the wind down work effort for this fiscal year, also discuss other related issues on how we're going to move forward in Oceano, possibilities of contracting with 5 cities and or divesting with the county, so that we're all on the same page and keep communication flowing. So we have a regular monthly meeting scheduled with those city managers. Also attended the NCMA meeting with the agricultural representatives. We do that once a year to present the annual report that is submitted to the court. We go over it with the agricultural community. Just for information, we're looking for new monitoring well locations in the agricultural area off of Halcyon Road, kind of on the way to the Mesa. So they put that word out to those landowners out there if anyone was interested in perhaps allowing a monitoring well to be drilled on their property so that we can monitor the basin levels and water quality in those locations. As was mentioned earlier, there is a tree planting program through EcoSlow that the entire community of Oceano qualifies for, so not just us as a governmental agency, but anybody, if they want to contact EcoSlow and get trees planted, they can take advantage of that program. EcoSlow just left me a message today, so I haven't actually connected with them yet to see what the requirements are, but I look forward to seeing what they could do. I know we have a lot of infrastructure at our yards and around here that it would be nice to shield with some trees. So we'll see what we can do to take advantage of that program. And for the public and the board, we're going to be canceling our August 10th meeting. So there will be no regular meeting on August 10th. And with that, that's my report.
Thank you. Who are the ag representatives you met with?
The ones that were at the meeting, there was several Ikeda brothers. And I forget the other names off the top of my head.
Okay, thanks.
Do we have a contact, Mr. Clemens, for EcoSlow, either website, phone number?
I think the one that's in charge of the tree planting program, his name is Grant Halarte. But you can go to EcoSlow's website, and there's
EcoSlow.com.
ECOSLOW. It shows up however you do it.
Yeah, just type in ECOSLOW and you'll find it.
Good, thank you.
Any questions? No. Okay, then let's just punch on to staff, to director's meeting. On the 15th, I had a Five Cities Fire Authority regular monthly meeting. And we finalized the yearly, I just gave my report to the secretary. Pass that back. Thank you. I thought I could do it, but we conducted a final hearing on the 2022 weed abatement protest hearing, had a protest hearing and issued the abatement orders involving approximately 9 sites in Arroyo Grande, 7 and big sites in Arroyo Grande, 7 in Grover and 3 in Oceano, which I was kind of pleased that Oceano is doing its really good job. The clearing cost is estimated at $30,000, and that the property owners pay for that. It goes on their property tax. So, and then we received a status report on the Oceano Measure A22 wind down period. And that was presented by Fire Chief Lieberman, who's here tonight. Anyway, thank you. Do you want to do Zone 1A or do you want me to?
Go ahead. I don't.
Okay. I also attended the Zone 1A meeting on July 19th. And there was reports they're continuing to clear the levee of weeds. They're having to hand dig some of the weeds. The castor beans, the hemlock, and the fennel. They have sprays, but because of the environmental restrictions, logically, the sprays aren't as effective as actually coming down and hand-digging out some of those weeds, and so that's what they're doing, along with using the goats. And they're starting more work on the junction of Meadow Creek and the Oceano Lagoon, the Oceano Lagoon to everybody, not just the Oceano Lagoon where it meets the levee. There has to be some improvements mandated by the federal government, and they're about to present plans probably in the next 3 months. We'll be able to see what the planning is for that. And there's going to be a real challenge because the South County Sanitation outfall line goes right in that same area. And there could be some real challenges in meeting the requirements of the federal government and everybody else's. But they're going to keep working on it, and we should be able to find out something about that in 3 months. Yeah.
Is that public land or private land, the area you're talking about?
Public land.
Okay.
Right. It's right at the mouth of, at the end of Strand Avenue.
Sand Canyon?
Well, no, where the weir is from, the water is supposed to interchange between Oceano Lagoon, where it meets the Arroyo Grande Creek, and the creek, and there's a weir there that if the creek gets so high, it flows in and out. But the problem right now is not very effective, and the National Marine Fisheries wants to have the Oceano Lagoon as a site for steelhead to come in and transition between seawater and freshwater, which is the way it was when I was a kid, before they put the Corps of Engineers designed the levees, which they put in there. So the federal government in, what, the 50s, early 50s? Something like that, yeah. Designed some flood controls, and now the federal government wants it changed. But I think we all understand, because we've all advanced environmentally and in every other way. But they did report, one of the biologists with Zone 11A did report, he saw baby steelhead at the mouth of the creek this spring. So, you know, everybody who says it's a fantasy, it's not. Anyway, thank you. Moving on. Vice President Villa is not here. Director Gibson?
Yes. I had a Zone 3 meeting on the 14th, and we mainly discussed cloud seeding. It's very interesting, and I'll see if Carrie can put the report on cloud seeding on our website. There's a lot of data and some interesting things on there. They don't have the actual amount that we gained this year, so that'll come out in a couple of months. So,
the amount of water that came from a seeding?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, we only did seeding, I think, 7 times. There weren't that many storms, and they have to have, you know, certain conditions.
Is there any plan for the near future?
Yeah, we're going to continue this year. So hope it rains.
Thank you. Director Austin?
Nothing.
Director Moore?
Nothing. President White, just to answer Director Montes' question, it's ecoslow.org.
Thank you.
And I will now open it up for questions, for comments from the audience. I remembered.
My name is Patty Davis. I'm a homeowner here in Oceano. I just want to thank Oceano Community District, the Sheriff's Department, and whoever else was involved in cleaning up 17th Street yet again. We really appreciate your efforts. We want our downtown to be viable and invitable, and until we keep that area clean and presentable, we cannot expect people to enjoy visiting here. So thank you all for your efforts.
Thank you.
Good evening again, still April. I wanted to piggyback on Mr. Clemens's and just add to his name is Grant Hellett, H-E-L-E-T-E, at EcoSlow. And also, if you go on the Oceano's Advisory Council website, the main page, there's a banner area that says Hot Topics, Events, and Freebies, and there's information and a link there as well. Thank you. Oh, sorry.
The spelling of the last name?
The Mr. Grant's last name?
Yes.
It's H-E-L-E-T-E.
H-E-L-E-T-E.
Yes, and he is with EcoSlow. Thanks.
Okay. Moving on to consent agenda items. Do we need to separate any of those in any way?
No. Not for me.
Okay. I guess we might as well public comment.
Good evening, Julie Tacker, and I just wanted to speak briefly to just the one item related to the RINCON contract. I wondered, it says in your staff report that two local firms indicated they would not be proposing due to the staffing availability. I wondered what firms those were, and maybe Mr. Clemens will answer that question, but I just don't like sole sourcing, no matter what it is, even though professional services is an allowable sole sourcing thing. It just doesn't feel right for me that you're not getting bids and not finding the best, the lowest price for the same equal work for your ratepayers. It's always uncomfortable for me. So I wondered who those consultants were that declined to propose, and entirely up to your board, but it seems like you could ask for other consultants to weigh in, just so that you have that due diligence for the ratepayers.
Thank you.
Yeah, the two that did not propose were LSA and SWAC, but we are not sole sourcing. We got two proposals.
That's what I thought.
And yeah. Rincon was the most qualified and the lowest cost.
Thank you.
Which was in the staff report.
Thank you. Anyone else? Entertain a motion?
Oh, I'll make a motion that we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Montez?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
And President White?
Yes. Moving on to business items. Hell to get old. Presentation by the Victory Garden Program regarding upcoming workshops. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Becky Bednar. I'm a master gardener. I live on the Napomo Mesa. And I just wanted to explain, master gardeners are trained by the University of California in sustainable landscape practices for home gardeners. And I'd also like to thank General Manager Will Clemens and Director Linda Austin for their support over the past year in our Victory Garden program. We've started at the fire station, right adjacent here, with a Victory Garden a year ago, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. But first, the reason I'm here tonight is to invite the community of Oceano. There aren't too many people here from Oceano, but we would like to invite you to our Victory Garden program, which is, we have a workshop coming up. We have flyers available at the table over here. I've passed these out to the board. And this is the flyer. If anybody would like to join us, we have a series of four workshops. And they're on Sundays, four Sundays in August at the train station, the train depot. Thank you again for allowing us to use the depot for the workshops. We have 14 master gardeners that have volunteered to do these workshops over the course of four Sundays, and we cover various topics that are geared towards beginning gardeners to grow their own food in any way they can. They can grow in any space, small spaces, pots, a balcony, their backyard, whatever they have. And we cover everything from soil to site selection, raised beds, California natives, and pollinator gardens, fruit tree selection. And it's the classes are geared towards the cool Oceano climate, which can be challenging for growing food. So we encourage the Oceano community to come to these classes, and over the past year, we've really felt good about what we've done. We started with the raised beds, we've planted some fruit trees, we've had the Victory Garden graduates come back and maintain the garden. The produce that we've grown has been donated to the food bank, and we've maintained workshops over every month of various topics, mulching and bare root trees and whatever is appropriate for that month. So we'd like to continue doing that, and we really appreciate the opportunity to do this in Oceano and for the local community. So thank you for letting us have this opportunity to get participation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Do you by chance cover all hydroponics or anywhere near that?
We do. Anything, any way that we can encourage people to grow plants. And especially, yeah, if that's a way for somebody to grow indoors, if they don't have a balcony or a way to do it outside, we'll encourage them to do hydroponics or whatever permaculture is available.
So what vegetables should I plant in my garden?
Well, in August, we'll talk about cool season vegetables. Mm-hmm. So the reason we do it in August and September, going into the cool season, is so that people can prepare for the cool season. So that would be broccoli and the cool season, kale. We have, you know, lists of things to plant in the fall season.
Sugar peas,
that's right.
Awesome
peas.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Peas are awesome.
Lettuce, we can plant. The nice thing about this climate is there are a lot of things we can grow all year that other climates can't grow. So it's great. A lot of opportunities. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I want to thank you. Thank you for bringing this to Oceano. It's been really rewarding. I took the class until my arm, but I highly recommend people take part in this. It's really, really...
You forgot to bring us some samples of your vegetables.
I could have brought some zucchini.
Yeah, that's what we have now. So anyway, yeah, thank you so much for coming.
Yes, and I... Okay, moving on. Results of Measure A22 regarding a special tax for emergency medical and fire protection services. Who's going to lead this off?
That'll be me.
Thank you.
So, as we know, Measure A22 failed to pass again by the supermajority that was required. Still had a majority support from the community. So if it would have been put on the ballot by a initiative signature, it would have passed both times. But that's not the case. Since the government put it on the ballot, it needs the supermajority, so it failed to pass. So that... starts the wind-down period this fiscal year, in which on July 1st, 2023, we will no longer be part of the Five-City Fire Authority. So over the next year, we're going to have a lot of work to do, not only to separate our assets and our liabilities between the agencies that make up the Five-City Fire Authority. So that work effort is plugging along, and mostly that's going to be done by the Five Cities Fire Authority, but we'll have certain decisions to make when it comes to those particulars once we know them. But now we have to figure out what to do moving forward. And so basically I wanted to bring this item early. Just, we've discussed it in the past. In fact, your board has given the general manager authority to apply to LAFCO to divest in the past, and I just wanted to make sure that that action is still what the board desires, and other options that are available, what you would like me to pursue over the next year for you to consider in providing fire service moving forward after July 1st, 2023. So I've kind of outlined what some of those options are in the staff report as I see them. I see that we could either contract for services directly with CAL FIRE, contract for services with Five City Fire Authority. We could attempt to stand up our own fire department once again. That's kind of would be going backwards in time, in my opinion. Or we could apply to the LAFCO to divest of our powers and turn the services over to the county. So it would probably be prudent for us to pursue many of those options simultaneously, concurrently, so that, you know, we have a choice rather than just go down one path. And so I would recommend that we move concurrently down the path of getting proposals from CAL FIRE, from Five Cities Fire Authority, and starting the divest, just, I can't even say the word, starting the process to divest of our power and turning it over to the county. I wouldn't recommend trying to stand up our own fire department, because at best it's going to be a part-time fire department. And the question that comes up if you have your own fire department and it's part-time is, what happens when you're closed? Who's going to serve the community? If you're contracting for services with Five Cities Fire or CAL FIRE, you know you're going to get service from somewhere. You know, when this station is closed, it's going to come, if it's CAL FIRE, it's going to come from Pismo or Napomo. If it's Five Cities Fire, it's going to come from Grover or Rio Grande. But if it's your own department, you don't know where it would come from. You would hope for mutual aid, but there's no guarantee there. So I wouldn't really want to waste time trying to put any effort into standing up our own fire department unless that's what you desire me to do. So really I'm looking for board direction on which options we should pursue moving forward so that you have what you need to make a decision later this fiscal year. And with that, I'll... Yeah. Chief is here for questions.
I wonder if some of the members of the audience aren't also here and want to discuss it. I wonder if we ought to let them tell us their feelings first, if anybody would like to discuss the fire. No?
Is this public comment?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Public comment. Yeah, I didn't say it quite right, but that's what I meant, Julie. Yeah.
I'd love to contribute a little bit here and a little bit there.
Yeah. Maybe for the first time in his... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm Julie Tacker, and maybe for the first time in history, Mr. Clemens, I agree with you. the pursuing the three options is a good thing. It's what you're going to go to the contractors with that I think maybe that's another discussion for another day. But in the budget that you're adopting, next item, it looks like, you know, you're well over $1 million this year. And according to this staff report from Mr. Clemens, you have one shift a week being covered by Five Cities Fire Authority for that $1.15 million. One shift a week. So you kind of already know what you're going to get from Five Cities Fire. If that's the number that you're going to take to CAL FIRE, you need to know what you're going to get. Similarly, divestiture, that's how you pronounce it, is an option in that then the county decides what the number is and what they can provide through contracting with CAL FIRE. So that conversation of what is the number and what will that cover in a manner of services, it doesn't seem to me from what Mr. Wade Horton said back in May, it doesn't seem to me that this number can be spread further by anybody but the county. When he was here in May, he said he thought they could do 3 days a week. If that number remains the same, that is likely. You tried to implement a fire tax, but you didn't have the choices for your residents. You didn't have a quote from CAL FIRE, a quote from Five Cities, and this divestiture number in the county. And so without that information, clearly that's why it failed. And now that's the information you're going to be seeking. Personally, I don't want you to spend any more money with consultants or anything going down that path to try to help you find the answer. I think divestiture is probably the best for your ratepayers as far as how far their money can go. Secondly, I would recommend that you definitely get a bid from CAL FIRE, and if you'll allow. In 2009, the very first time I came to this podium, that was the subject I asked you to seek before entering into the agreement with Five Cities Fire, was get a bid from CAL FIRE. Irony, 13 years later, 14 years later.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening, staff and directors, Charles Zavarni. I agree with what Mr. Clemens said as well, and with what Ms. Tacker said. I look forward to this process and getting that kind of information that the the county was withholding, or the district did not have the resources to get for the election. I too am concerned that for the remaining year, we'll have one shift. I'm not sure if one shift means 24 hours or that means an 8-hour shift. And I think Ms. Tacker's point of, well, you know what you'll get for a million whatever is one shift. I mean, how is that possible when the county says that they can provide three shifts? Right now, I really favor divestiture. I really think that getting out of the fire business is a good idea for OCSD. And ultimately, why would we contract directly with CAL FIRE when by divestiture, we're going to end up with CAL FIRE anyway, because that's the county's fire department. And CAL FIRE is flush with money. I think they're a much more sustainable provider of services for emergency medical and fire. So, like I said, I look forward to the process. Thank you.
Good evening, April. I also am in favor of divestiture, and I, as a resident of Oceano, ask that you really just go and find out what our choices are, what the costs are from all the potential providers, et cetera. If Mr. Clemens feels that having our own fire department isn't very feasible, I kind of agree with him. Shocking, I know. But I do agree with that. That just seems like... seems kind of backwater to me that we would do that when we have very good resources available to us. So my request is that you look at all the options, get the information, and bring it to us. We're all individuals. We can't do this. That's what your job is to find that information and provide it to us. But again, with Mr. Clemens, divestiture is my option. Thank you.
Chief, do you want to speak?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Good evening, Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief, Five Cities Fire. Great conversation. Unfortunate circumstances. I do want to clarify something that I've heard a couple of times with public comment to make sure everyone's very clear on this. The Oceano Fire Station is staffed by Five Cities personnel one shift a week due to staffing constraints. But Five Cities Fire is serving Oceano 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So that's the big delta between what we're doing, and it's unfortunate the station's not open every day, but we're here every day. And Mr. Horton's letter is the county administrative officer said the station would be open 3 days a week, period. So I just want to make sure that everyone's very clear that even when the station's not staffed, we're still covering Oceano for the rest of this fiscal year.
Being covered by Rover Beach and Arroyo.
Wherever our crews are responding from, they're coming to Oceano.
But isn't that usually where they respond
to? On those days, yes.
Just to know where our other backup come from.
So we're running, we have one less staff, which prohibits us from keeping the Oceano station open on those other shifts. Right. So our remaining stations are in Arroyo Grande or Grover Beach. Right. But also, it's truly... When the units are mobile, they use GPS technology, and the nearest available unit is coming into Oceano. So it's not always a static address. And that would be if we were maxed out with our resources, we would do a mutual aid request for additional resources. But with our crews, we're coming from those two other stations.
Do you see any change that this next year in staffing here would be open anymore?
You know, the Third Amendment to the JPA maintains flat funding that we've had for 3 years for this last and fourth final year. So without additional funding, I don't see our staffing changing, sadly.
But I will counter with one thing, that the Arroyo Grande truck whips down Fair Oaks, whips down House, and whips down the Pike in there in Oceano. I've timed it. It's like 4 minutes, 5 minutes max. And I've been watching Pulse Point. And in the afternoon, the two crews that are on board are going from call to call to call to call to call anyway. So it's not like they're sitting at the station waiting for something. They're pretty well out in the field working through the afternoons. And
that's when the GPS technology is
It's
a huge game changer.
Yeah, they just go. They can just move from where they are to the next. I think it was in Grover. They went from one today from one spot to another spot. Rather rapidly. And one thing, I think, unless there's some more questions, you got questions?
No, that's good.
I was just going to remind everybody, when we divest from fire services, Oceano will not have a say in fire service. It's not like we're going to be on a committee representing Oceano to the county. We can lobby our supervisors, but we will not have anybody at the table, any voice at the table. Just, that's what we have to remember. If we contract with the other two possible ways, we would have a say. Just point, and I have not made any kind of decisions in how I am going to vote this, how I'm going to vote to support this, because I think we have to go all three ways. I support the manager's idea. We just throw it all out there. We couldn't find out ahead of time what we're going to find out now. I'm not sure what an offer that Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande is going to make to Oceano in the Five Cities Fire. I don't know. So... There's just a bunch of unknowings, and we're going to work very hard to find the best deal we can. Anyway, anybody else got a comment? Are you good? Did I take your...
No. So I'm just looking for direction, and what I've kind of heard is pursue three options. Direct contracting with Cal Fire, Five Cities, and then pursue divesting of our power.
Yes and no. We don't want to even think about the standalone.
No.
We won't even consider
that.
There's
no way it could be done.
And then just the three Five Cities Fire contracting and divestiture, do it all at once so we're not caught like the last minute.
Yeah, we got to move now, because I understood it takes 8 months for divestiture to be complete, something like that. I'm trying to remember what we were told.
I think from David Church's presentation that he gave you in 2019, it was 6 to 8 months. So,
yeah.
I have just a comment. I wasn't aware that divestiture would mean losing control. So I, too, think we should consider all our options. I'm very open to that. But I'm concerned about losing control. That's important to me as a representative of the community of Oceana.
divesting of any power means you no longer have that power as a district, so you cannot spend any money on that service.
Thank you for clarifying.
I have a question. And, well, maybe I'm just going to ask it. Is the county going to talk to us before we divest? If we're in the process of divesting, are they going to wait until we... I'm trying to get this all done so we have fire service on July 2nd, 2023.
Yes. I, in fact, talked to Mr. Horton yesterday, and we have... He said he's going to set a meeting up next week. So that'll be the first time we've met since the election.
Okay. Thank you for moving forward. Yeah.
With you or with the fire committee?
And it'll be with me.
Just you.
Yeah.
That's
and
fine.
Also with fire chief.
Another thing that Mr. Horton's letter talked about was we would have enough for 3 days a week. And if we didn't have enough funds, then they would look at all of our assets. And then if that still wasn't enough, then they would adjust our level of service. So I am reluctant to talk about divestiture, but I think we have to look at all options.
Great.
There's many, many reasons that I can think of that I don't want this divestiture. But one of them is even historic. You know, the historic idea, we've always had a fire department. Oceano Volunteers established the community service district, in a sense. It was the start of the whole community. So from a historic standpoint, you know, you can weep and look at it, but we have to be real practical as best we can.
Well, and also look at our assets, how long that's taken to, you know, this building and
we've set all the
sheriff's station
and the sheriff's station
all these years,
and we might lose all of those with divesting. So
what would be nice is we could hear more from the community. I mean, this is an outcry, not an outcry, this is community speak up. We've heard from three people that are encouraging divestiture. I get it. Okay, who else are there? You know, it would be nice to get more of a community that would weigh in on what they would like the direction to be.
And so there was some talk of money. What we have available is not what's in our budget currently. Because what's in our budget currently, we already know we're spending too much. That was the case. Thankfully, this year, we're not dipping into reserves to fund fire, but we're utilizing funds that could be spent on facilities for fire service. So the amount that we're going to ask for that I think we can safely use for fire is about $1,050,000, because we need money for lights, our lighting fund. We need money for our legacy safety plan to pay CalPERS. And that can only come from property tax. So we can't give up all of our property tax. So there's a ceiling to how much property tax we can use for fire. Yeah. And that's about $1,050,000. And that's the amount that's going to be presented to each of those agencies. So CAL FIRE, what can you do with $1,050,000? Five Cities Fire, what can you do with $1,050,000? And county, this is what you get. So I wouldn't necessarily worry too much about losing things because we have that power. We decide what we want to give the county. Yes, we could give them our garbage franchise money and franchise. I don't think they really want it. But it's only so much money, and it's not going to get you much.
Yeah.
And the county's not going to do with it what we do with it. the county's going to spend it on roads. We spend it to clean up illegal dumping. So I wouldn't recommend giving up our garbage franchise. The sheriff's station, we get good revenue from that. That's an option we could use for fire, but do you really want to give up that revenue stream and spend it all on fire when that's really what we use to maintain our buildings?
Yeah, I was going to say that's facilities money, isn't it? It goes into facilities slot.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we have the power of what we – it's a negotiation. We tell the county what we can afford to give them, and then they come up with what they can afford to serve the community with.
So, Mr. Clemens, one thing I wanted to ask, if we give these monies, $1,050,000 to the county, does that county use that money only for Oceano, or now that it's in their pocket, they distribute it how they see fit?
That's the other thing with divestiture. Nothing's guaranteed. Once that property tax goes to the county, it goes to the county.
That's what I wanted to understand.
You know, the intention is they would use it for fire in Oceano because they have a plan for services, and that gets approved through LAFCO. So they're going to use that money for fire in Oceano. But who's to say if budget crunch comes down, you know, they may throw in more money in Oceano. Who knows? That's a discretionary act they could do, but it's not guaranteed.
And what would our level of service be?
But you're saying they wouldn't necessarily have to put a fire truck in our fire station. Or they could take the whole fire station either way, I guess.
Right. So there's a lot of flexibility that the county would have in providing fire service to Oceano. So that's part of losing that control. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but they also have a lot more resources than we do as a CSD. They have a lot more revenue sources. So,
well, if you look at their budget, it's not too promising.
But I have the direction I need to start. So that's really all we're here for tonight, is to get started down the right path.
Should we do it? I don't think Shirley's. Should we go all three ways?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's do some research and get what's best for Oceano.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Mr. Clemens will come back with proposals for us to consider.
Yeah, I think the cost and then the coverage. What's the level of service going to be? Of course, if it's the county, they can say one thing and do another, right?
Move on? Okay. You have your direction, sir? Okay, moving on to item C. Review fiscal year 21-22 budget status as of June 30th, 22, and consider recommendation to approve year-end excumbrances. Sorry. Thank you. Thank you. You guys can go. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Probably got gardens to water.
I guess I didn't print it up.
Well, thank you, President White, members of the board. So we have the fourth quarter budget review as of June 30th, 2022, and this is for fiscal 21-22, so last year's budget. And we also have the encumbrances. And encumbrances, those are the contracts and purchase orders that have been approved in the last fiscal year, but the costs haven't been fully incurred. So in attachment Exhibit A, we have listed out the items that will roll forward to the next fiscal year, which we're already in, which is fiscal 2022-23. And with that, I have just a quick presentation. So the budget worksheets that are attached to your agenda item, they show the variance by line item. I'm just going to show summaries here. And here is the general fund summary. And we have no budget adjustments to this fund for the last fiscal year. Currently, right now, we had a budget adjustment during the year, which was also attached to your agenda item. But for today's board item, there are no proposed budget adjustments. So the general fund incurred an overall savings of $57,000. Property taxes came in $52,000 higher, and this includes funds from SB 1090. That's the Diablo funds we get. There's a shortfall, you can see, of $127,000 under other sources. And other sources are from the reimbursement for our administrative and operational crew overhead allocations. So you'll see that same in savings in the expenditures in the admin budget down right under the first item in expenditures. So they basically cancel each other out. Then we have the facilities funds. It actually received $11,000 less than we thought it would in public facilities fees. Public facilities fees are funds paid to us by the county for new development, and there wasn't as much new development during the 2021-2022 year. And then you can see all the savings come out to a positive variance of $57,000. Next, I'll move to the enterprise fund. We'll start with the water fund. So the overall sales in the water were under budget by $57,000, and this was helped offset by connection fees that we received during the year. And you can see a water revenue comparison of actual sales versus targeted sales, which has been included. It shows the last 3 years of history. It's on page 110 of your board packet, which shows more of a seasonal variance and a breakdown of each billing period. And then the shortfall in revenues, they will be more than covered by the savings we had in expenditures. And the largest item line item we had in savings for the water fund was our state water budget line item. Then I'm going to move to the wastewater fund. So the slight shortfall in revenues of about $1,800. And that'll be covered by, obviously, the large savings we had in expenditures. And the savings in expenditures were actually all over across the board for each section. We had savings in personnel, supplies, and our admin allocation. And then our garbage fund. So the franchise fees from South County Sanitary, they came in lower than I anticipated. And this is, again, after Resolution 2020-02 was adopted in 2020, where we your board reduced franchise fees from 10% to 5%. The savings in expenditures will help offset that revenue shortfall, and the same goes for the garbage fund, as did the wastewater fund, where we had an overall savings in personnel, supplies, and the admin allocations. And then the last item is the encumbrances. So on this slide, I've got them listed out. And these are contracts and purchase orders that were approved in fiscal 2021-2022, but haven't been fully incurred. So by encumbering these items, they will roll forward to the next fiscal year, which we're already in, and your final budget will be presented to you at the August 24th meeting, and they'll be incorporated under encumbrances in your final budget. So the first item we have, that's for our USDA funding for our capital improvement projects with the Water Resource Reliability Program. And we are required to provide a preliminary engineering report, and it's currently being prepared. And we have a remaining balance of $1,890, which will roll forward to next year. And you'll see that in the water fund. And then We also have a remaining balance with GSI for our NCMA annual report, and the remaining balance is $13,894. We have a contract with WSC where they have been providing staff extension services for the NCMA technical group. So they've been working to update the 2002 management agreement, and the remaining balance of $5,932 will roll forward, also in the water fund. And then the district purchased a new analyzer for well 8 and the entire balance of $5,200 to Swan Analytical Instruments will roll forward for the new analyzer. The district also purchased new handhelds this year. They're used for meter reading. And the remaining balance of $5,795 will roll forward to the next year. And then we have our Prop 1 grant revenues and expenditures for the stormwater capture groundwater recharge project. So that will roll forward, and that's for a total of $2,461,830. And then we also have another Prop 1 grant. The revenues and expenditures weren't fully expensed in last year, and this is for our water resource reliability programs projects 1-1 and 1-9, and that's going to roll forward for $294,778. And lastly, the portion of the South County Sanitary Services retroactive costs that was approved at the June 8th meeting, the portion that's allocated to the month of July, which is $18,332, will roll forward to the next year. So with that, the review of the fourth quarter budget, that's a receive and file item, but establishing the encumbrances, which are these, and they were included in your agenda as Exhibit A, those will require a motion from your board. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
No questions? No. Entertain a motion?
Public comment.
I always forget about 10 times a year.
You were doing so good.
Yeah. Seeing no one come forward, I will now entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion that we approve the year-end encumbrances in the report of the fiscal year 2021-22.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Montez?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
And President White?
Yes. Okay. Moving on to our hearing item. Who's presenting that? It would be...
Thank you, Director. President White. Let me get the next presentation. We have two presentations for this item. So, President White, members of the board, we have the public hearing to consider protests to increase the solid waste rates for you in item 9A. So we're going to start with a presentation, which this was provided by Bill Statler. He was the consultant that the district, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Pismo Beach all collaborated to hire. He couldn't be here today, so he provided me his presentation, and I'll go over it. And then we also have Jeff Claren here today, who is here to represent the South County Sanitary Services, and he'll present after me. So then after that, we'll open the public hearing, and then we'll hear from the public, and you can hear their testimony. So, as you know, since our introduction to this item on June 8th, notices, Prop 218 notices went out to the customers, and so far we've received 4 protests. And I will start with his presentation. So, the neighboring agencies, we partner, like I said, AG, Grover, and Pismo Beach, and we perform a rate review with Bill Statler. So we're all neighboring agencies, and because we all have the same services, franchise agreement, except for ours, which, as you guys know, in 2020, we lowered our franchise fees from 10 to 5%. So we're the only one that has that. But other than that, our franchise agreements are close. And then we also have the same methodologies and financial information. So then the rate recommendation, this is the increase. So the initial one that was proposed by South County Sanitary Services in October 2021, it was for 23.35%. And after the rate review was completed, it was reduced to 21.03%. So the key changes from the October, the initial rate review, to now was that the green waste processing costs, they were reclassified to pass-through costs. So these costs, they can be recovered, but there's no profit allowed on these items. And then also the IWMA fees were excluded. And so these are approved by the IWMA, and they're charged separately on the customer bill. So both those items were removed from the rate review. So here are the current and the proposed new rates for a single-family residence. You can see here the smallest, the 32-gallon container, will go up by $3.15. The 64-gallon container will go up by $4.53, and the 96-gallon will go up by $8.87. So the key drivers to the rate increase was depreciation, the green waste costs, insurance costs, and the oil and gas costs. And you can see here the percentage by which they impacted the rate. So Mr. Statler's findings. So he had findings during his review, and the first one was the timing and completion of the rate application, the increased level of service that has been that has changed from the last time we did a rate review, which was 2020, and the trigger option, which is an option in our franchise agreement, which allows the district to terminate the franchise agreement if the increase over the accumulative cost of living is higher than the rate increase or the proposed, which is in this case. So a part of the resolution that has been provided to your board waives this option, and that has been recommended by Mr. Statler in his report. And there's also the need for us to update the rate setting manual, which we've discussed before, and moving forward with that. And I know the city of SLO has taken the first steps. So we have been invited to their meetings to sit on them and hear options and contribute. So here's the next part will be the rate application review. And so first, Mr. Statler, he reviews the revenues, the expenses, and operation data for the base year, which in this case is this year. Then the following years, which they call the interim years, he compares those to the consumer price index, pass-through costs, and any adjustments to the franchise fees, which in this rate review was only ours. And then, as you guys know, the interim years, those were 2015 and then 2019, which was the last time we had a rate review. And they did the same as they did last time, and they just have a straightforward CPI increase for the upcoming years, which would be 2023 and 2024. So this large increase is this 21.03, and then going forward, it'll just be the CPI increase. So then Mr. Statler's, he looks at if the base year increase or 2022, which is this year, should be granted. He looks at how much does it cost to provide these services, are the costs reasonable, and if so, what is the reasonable level of return on these items? And so then to evaluate if the costs are reasonable, he reviewed the cost details and any changes that occurred from 2020 to 2022. He compares them to the CPI index and the solid waste rates in comparable communities, which we have a slide later that shows different areas and where we sit against them. So then there are different types of costs that can affect this rate increase. The first is the allowable costs. So those are direct labor, office salaries, depreciation, gas and oil, insurance, And you can see that the ones highlighted in red, which are depreciation, oil and gas, and insurance, and one of the pass-through costs, which is food and green waste, you can see those make up the majority of the rate increase at 98%. Then the second type of costs are pass-through, and those are mostly related to disposal, which is the landfill, the MRFs, which are a material recovery facility, and related to recycling, food and green waste, franchise fees, and interest. So another way to look at this increase is the U.S. CPI increased by 8.5% over the last 2 years, and excluding all the detailed review of cost drivers in this rate application, South County sanitary services costs increased by 4.1%. So here is that slide I was just talking about where it compares the single family residence rates in communities surrounding us, and you can see we're one of the lowest down at the bottom. So then we have to analyze what is reasonable, what is a reasonable rate of return for these costs. So the allowable costs have allowed 8% of operating profit, and the pass-through costs are allowed at cost. So those would be disposal fees, franchise fees, and any related party lease and transportation costs. And lastly, there are excluded costs that can't be a part of the rate increase, and those are charitable and political contributions, entertainment, income taxes, non-IRS approved profit sharing plans, fines and penalties, and limits on officer compensation. So then here is the breakdown that's pulled out of the rate review, and this shows the allowable costs with that 8% profit that's allowed, and then the pass-through costs listed out below that. And that will take you to the bottom where you can see the 21.03% increase. In conclusion, Mr. Statler found that the costs are reasonable and the proposed rate increase meets a reasonable rate of return. And with that, that was his presentation. And we have Jeff Claren here from South County Sanitary Services, and I will pull up your presentation. And you can just let me know when you want me to switch slides.
Sure.
Yeah.
As she pulls it up, good evening, President White and members of the board. Thank you for that presentation, Carrie. My name is Jeff Claren. I'm the district manager here for South County Sanitary Services. There we go. You can go on to the next one, Carrie. So what I get to do today is detail a little bit about the cost increases that we've been kind of incurring. So I'm going to break down a little bit of that 21.03% that actually Mr. Statler was presenting. So when we look at the first two right here, capital expenditures, we had replacement trucks. That was a big percentage of it. You can see there it's 7.63% of it. And one of the things that what happened was the California Air Resources Board, the CARB is what they call it, they're requiring any engine that is older than 2010 to be replaced by 2023. Well, you know, this definitely, when you have a fleet of 100 trucks, you know, put a real burden on us. So, you know, over the last 3 years, we've been doing double-digit replacements, and we got 19 this year. And what's interesting about this is that the price of trucks have been rising, especially from the last year. In 2017, I could buy a truck for about $300,000. Now, what you're looking at this past year, we're looking at one of a truck is a little over 400,000, and one of our compressed natural gas trucks is closer to 500,000. So in a matter of span, it's really jumped up on that one. So that's, you know, you go from, you know, a fleet with, you know, depreciation of zero to buying a new truck that's actually more expensive. You know, that's a big cost of the rate component right there. And then the other portion here is the HCI Compo Digester. And what it is, this is an anaerobic digester in San Luis Obispo that takes all your green waste and food waste. And it was triggered by something called SB 1383. And what was really cool about this community, along with the IDMA at that time, you know, they had the forthright to look at forward and really determine that, you know, something's come up in the future and we do need a digester. So, you know, a team from the IDMA actually researched and found somebody, and it was called HCI Compo Gas. And then they were a digester, and they did a lot of places in Europe, several places, and did a lot of research into the Swiss technology. And they decided San Luis Obispo would be the first one in North America. You know, so it was an exciting time to do so. But, you know, it got started in operation in 2018. There are some interesting things that happens when being the first in the North America. They learn things. What we found out, what they found out, being the first in North, this is the first beach community they've been in. And one thing you don't really think about is when you're pulling your green waste material, it pulls up a lot of sand. And that sand is very very abrasive to a lot of metal equipment. So what ended up happening is that items that they thought would last, you know, 7 years, 8 years, were going in 1 to 2 years. So they had to do a redesign, and that actually increased the cost a lot. So that's your unexpected wear. And one of the things, too, is that in Europe, apparently they do a little bit better on food waste. We're going to get there with SB 1383, but unfortunately, when it first started, it was designed for a little bit more food waste, and that food waste didn't quite come. We're hoping 1383 does that, and we're definitely, you know, on our way. But in the meantime, they had to do something called the Fats, Oils, and Grease Program, FOG. So they were able to put a little bit more capital investment to add that material into the digester to help with the gas digestion. So, you know, they're doing it, and then it's a very good partnership to see where it is. You know, and they're very excited to be, you know, the first in North America. And they're actually building other places in California as well. The important things on this slide here, there are two of them here. I mentioned the CARB, Air Resources Board, and 1383. Both of these are two unfunded state mandates. So that's your two biggest costs right there. Next slide, Kerry. Then the other parts that make up of the 21%, you know, as you probably know, insurance costs has been going up. Healthcare for employees went up 7.5%, and liability insurance, you know, it's a litigious world. You know, went up 22%. But when you take that out, take that component, it rolls up to about a little over 2.28% just for the insurance cost for this rate increase. And then I have fuels and oils there. It's 1%. I said consumables are rising during the COVID impacts. Grease, diesel, you know, all kinds of our fluids was hard to get, and that increased the pricing. And then one thing to note, when we did the base year, it was submitted in October of 2021. We actually projected the fuel low. You know, no one could anticipate what happened in Ukraine and Russia. You know, we're estimating $4.50 diesel fuel, and then to jump at $7, you know, that was never thought of. But that's part of the rate making manual. You'd have to do an estimate, and unfortunately, we were low on that. So. It was just a point just to make out. And then the other one, Kerry mentioned the MRF, the material recycling facility. You know, it's the cost to recycle, it's not lowering. So there's a little bit portion of there. We did a little adjustment to our drivers, and then general operational costs result in the last 2.81% of that 21%. Next slide, please. So I bring this up, this franchise agreement. Kerry talked a little bit about what, you know, the process of submitting the base rate application and so forth. And when you look at the first slide, we do the base year every 3 years, like she said. And when you look at it, you know, it allows for an 8% on allowable expenses. And when we do that, it basically is saying for every $100 we spend, we make $8. But when you actually take the pass-through fees and so forth, things that we don't actually get an operating margin on it, we spend about $100 and make $5 for every $100 that we do. And I established that because I told you the base year is an estimate. So what do we do to make sure that's taken care of? In the franchise agreement, it has something that has an independent annual third-party audit. So it compares what we did, you know, from our base year and what we estimated. And in 2020, the actual operating margin was 1.2%. And we just finished 2021. Well, not me, but the independent third-party auditor. And we submitted it to the district. And unfortunately, it was negative. But the thing is, you know, with the base rate case, it's always forward-looking. We don't look back. You know, meaning we can't recover what was lost. So we always try to look forward. You know, and even after this 21.03 rate increase, as you saw in a slide earlier, that Oceano still has some of the lowest districts, some of the lowest rates in the district here. I mean, the county here. And that slide didn't include Santa Barbara County. When you see that in there, you know, Oceano is definitely the lowest. So next slide, please. And what I wanted to do is to show a breakdown of cost to see where it is. What we have here is, I have here, the rates are based on the size of the garbage container. So we have three sizes, a 32, 64, and 96. And what it is, it's a rate that encourages recycling. So if you actually get a 32-gallon, you get a recycling container and green waste organics container as part of your service. And you can choose from a 64 or 96, so on either the recycling or the organics container. So honestly, the more you recycle, the thought is to you should be able to get a smaller garbage container. So what we ended up doing is we looked at Oceano itself and really looked at a breakdown of what do your residents have. And, you know, 40% of your residents use a 32-gallon cart. In this new rate, when you're looking at $18.13 per month, you break it down, it's about $4 per week per customer. And if you break it down divided by three, it's about $1.39. And that's per can. So what you're seeing is that you have three drivers, three trucks coming in once a week at your curb. Every time that truck comes out, you're just saying that's $1.39. We did the same thing for the 64, the mid-size one. You got that's the majority of residents there. It's 48% of it. And same thing. It breaks down to $6 per week, about $2 per cart. And the same thing with the 96-gallon container. That's your least most popular in this area. It's 12%. And it breaks down to a little under $12 a week or a little under $4 per pickup. And the last slide, please. So I showed you what the breakdown of the total cost. This is just the actual increase, what 21.03% is. Again, the 32-gallon, when you look at it, 40% of your customers, they will see about 73 cents per week or about a quarter per pickup. Same thing with your 64. It's 48% of them will see a little over a dollar or about 35 cents per cart if you want to break it down. And then, of course, the people who have the larger size container, it's about $2 a week or 68 per cart just for the rate increase. Next slide, please. So I was hoping I was able to explain that breakdown a little bit better. And then with that, any questions for me or Carrie will be available.
I have a question.
Sure.
So you talked about but gas prices are slowly going down, and, you know, I'm sure they're not. Gas isn't always the issue with Russia. There are other sources for getting gasoline. And so as the gas prices go down, would that possibly in the future lower your allowable expense of 8% because you're now saving on gas and oil?
Well, that's why the independent audits come out every year. That's why we always do it. Every 3 years, we adjust. You know, are we over-earning, under-earning? We don't look backwards, but that's why there's, you know, there was a pretty thorough review from the rate consultant to make sure that, does this make sense? Is it reasonable? But, yeah, when we did this in 2021, when you estimate what it should be for the next years, we estimated low. We were estimating about $4.50 per gallon for diesel. We didn't.
So if it went up to seven. That would meet your estimate with what you had.
Correct. Decided. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Do you think it's ever going to go back?
we hope.
I mean, just, you know, 100 trucks diesel. That's.
Well, we do have about there's about 40 of our trucks that are compressed natural gas. So the one thing about them, we're looking to purchase more of them, and just unfortunately, it's 100,000 more per capita. So we got to find that little balance.
How much are those
those natural gas?
It's about 500,000. So the non-CNG is about the regular diesel. They're closer to a little over 400,000.
Are there other vehicles that, I guess our federal government has said by 2030, all vehicles manufactured in the future are going to be non-gas? Would agencies like this agency here be exempt from that? Are there other renewable, since we're, getting biofuel from this trash, and I know it isn't what we expected, there are vehicles that run on that type of biofuel. Would that be something in the future to consider for your agency?
The compressed natural gas is actually from a renewable source from us.
Yeah.
So it is a renewable source that we actually purchase the gas from, so that is what it is. But the other portion is electrification. That's kind of the big topic. And then the nice thing is that we're part of a bigger company, Waste Connections, and they've been doing some research on the top-of-the-line products that are coming out. They're demoing a couple electrification trucks right now. And as that technology gets better and better, we will roll something out. But right now it's tough to keep a truck, find a truck where it can run for 11, 12 hours.
And, what do they do with that energy that they create from the food? What's that converted into? Is it a power type source, or is it electricity? Or
from the digester.
The digester, you're correct. It actually goes to electricity. And then unfortunately, we built the CNG plant at the hauling yard a little too late. That digester was planned in 2014, so they already had contracts at PG&E. But one of the things that we're going to be looking at is in the future, when they were able to get away from their agreements, is potentially putting that gas and filling the garbage trucks. So that is the intention. But for now, it is being renewed as electricity.
Okay, great. That's good to know that that's where we're
getting. Yeah, you couldn't, being that first in North America, and send our,
sure,
we couldn't have commitments on CNG. Yes, yes.
It's still very impressive.
Oh, thank you.
I believe we have some action.
Yeah, you'll have to open the public hearing.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And that way people can still submit protests to the rate increase, and then you can close the public hearing.
Yeah.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I am not protesting anything. But I did have a question, because just like when we raise water rates, your people stop or try to reduce their consumption so they don't have to pay as high a bill. Jeff, I forgot your last name, just showed that you have three tiers or three sizes of cans. And so those people in the higher use or the bigger cans are going to, there's some incentive there to save money using the recycle, using the green waste at more, and going to the lower, smaller can. Some of Waste Connections communities have an even smaller can than the 32-gallon. And I can imagine that people in Oceano, smaller households, people that garden more or recycle more, whatever, could get by with a smaller can. So I just want to look forward, maybe 3 years from now when you do your next rate study, to look at implementing a smaller can. And that encourages everyone to shop differently, because they they're looking for less packaging, because they know they're going to have to deal with that styrofoam thing that came with the goods they were buying. It just makes sense to reduce overall to help people in their pocketbook. So thanks.
That prompts a question from me to you, sir. To you, yeah. If you have a smaller can, could it be picked up by the mechanical arms?
The 20-gallon, what Ms. Stacker's talking about, it's actually kind of, it's pretty hard for us to do. We lose a lot of cans sometimes. So we've been trying to go away from those. But the thing is, we're looking at the 32-gallon is I mean, you're looking at $18 a month to see what it is. I mean, but the 20-gallon is pretty tough to pick up. We do lose containers in there, and there's only three communities that do that right now. And we're, you know, if we get an opportunity, we're probably not going to, we're going to not, we're trying not to continue that.
But if we can go to a 64 or to a 32.
Yes, that is definitely encouraged.
I mean, theoretically, you could take a lot of your trash, it goes in the trash, and hey, this will fit in the green waste. Mine used to be low, now it's taking up the trash, going into the green, and so I have less trash, more green, hence possibly use.
It's like my kids. I have to teach them how to, you know, they've been pretty good now, but, you know, it just takes a little bit more time to break it down, what's recycling, what's not. So a lot of it's the thin film plastic that's actually trash, but the cardboard that's, you know, on the boxes that come in with water bottles, they're definitely recyclable, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm a small house, but that 32 is filled every week.
And that's the tough part, is that the communities that we do have the 20, they see a lot more contamination in their recycling containers. So, you know, we do have to warn them, and it's tough on those ones because the 20 gallons is pretty small. It's really small, and people want to get to them, but we remind them that if there's contamination, you know, we do charge for contamination. And in the end, it ends up being more expensive if they keep getting contamination routes in their green waste or the recycling. So,
yeah.
I do have one other question as well. If by using the green can more, can we request, my can has gotten a lot more busier, dirtier. Coffee grinds, the eggshells that used to go in the trash. Is there a service at all where the cans can be cleaned by your agency?
We do. It's a service fee, you know. So what we normally recommend is, you know, to put a little dish soap and a little bit of water in there. Take a little shovel or broom, just swirl it around there, get it loose, leave it in there, and then when the truck dumps it, it gets a lot of it out. And then, and if it's you loosen up, if it's still there next week, you know, do the same thing, and it'll kind of work out pretty good.
So that's in the green waste. You could put a little water and dish soap.
Yeah, a little dish soap. Put it on the bottom just to kind of put it on there. Yeah.
Okay. Check it out.
Otherwise, it would be a service charge.
It would be a service charge. Yes.
There's a company that goes.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Pres. Yeah. I wouldn't fill it completely with water, but, you know, if you put a little bit of water in there and kind of do it, it'll work. And if you do that every other, you know, periodically, it should stay cleaner. And one of the things that we always tell people with the food waste, you know, that's something that's been a lot of promotion. You know, if there's something you can actually put it the day before garbage day, instead of, you know, when you roll up your can in your green waste container and you just dump your food waste in there, it's going to... Unfortunately, that's the nature of food waste. So if you
put food waste in the green waste,
yeah.
So we've told people to put it in the freezer if they can, and then dump it when they can.
Yeah.
So,
or if you've got a lot of leaves and green waste in the green waste can.
That's actually really good too. You know, put a little bit of grass into the bottom, then put the food waste. It comes right out. See, and that's the good thing is, hey, I actually had chickens in my old house.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah, I know chickens. Anyway, we transcript. Okay, let's behave here. Let's be professional. Let's make a motion. Or
is there any further public comment? Then you'd close the public hearing.
Okay, I'll close the public hearing, seeing no one come forward.
So we have four protests, so that means there is not a majority protest.
Yes.
So you can make a motion on number six if you wish.
Did we get any phone calls?
Number six.
Just not to protest. You have to write. You have to do a written. Yeah, you can't call a protest in.
Okay.
Oh, like complaints, know. Just overall complaints? Yeah, I feel like a couple, but it was more for informational when they got their notice.
Okay. So what are we making, a motion to approve the rate increase?
Yeah.
To adopt the number 6.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion to adopt number 6, the rate increase.
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt integrated solid waste rates effective August 1st, 2022, January 1st, 2023, and January 1st, 2024, and waive franchise section 8.3 rights to terminate the franchise.
So moved.
Roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Montez?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
And Vice President, excuse me, President White?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, that concludes the public hearing. Is there any other business to go before this board?
Nope.
Okay, and our final budget hearing will be our next meeting on August 24th.
Correct.
2022. We will not be meeting the second Wednesday of next month.
We are not meeting August 10th. Next meeting will be the 24th.
24th.
Got it.
Okay.
I move we adjourn.
Second.
Second. Adjourned. Meeting adjourned. Very much. Well, I did pretty good the first part of it.
You did. Thank you.